Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, and the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the privateer, number 511, on the state of the economy, right after this. You know, if you're earning $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep about 41% of what you create and produce. The government gets 59%. Now, that's about $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just kind of real special? But if you think that your share isn't enough, then why don't you work twice as hard and produce twice as much, and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes, just like you did this year, and you're going to net about 24%, and the government will net about 76%, which means that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you're going to net about 8% more net take-home pay than you did this year. And remember, that's guaranteed by Congress and the IRS. You produce twice as much, and they let you have 8% of it. That's why I contend that there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners and then only net 25% of it. Why don't you call and order my free 4-hour CD package and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information, and it answers many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is that we're paying so much and receiving so little. To order your free general law CD package, just call direct and order yours today. The number 417-273-4967, or you can go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct, 417-273-4967. Well, the global report from the privateer, keep in mind that the privateer comes from Australia. I'll give you the address and the price for the privateer. Let's take a look at the global report. He starts off by saying, this age of political spin and verbal deception is in a tragic age, and it denies even sensible people the possibility of getting a firm grasp of the current global situation and therefore the situation they themselves now find themselves in. Foremost amongst the methods used to accomplish this are the many politically manufactured side issues which infest the news. Exhibit A is, of course, the U.S. military debacle in Iraq, where President Bush has too few troops on the ground to control a violently escalating rebellion and where he cannot pull out without causing a huge U.S. political debacle. But Iraq is just the first, even though it's the largest, willful distraction. There are many other distractions, all of which, when combined, lead the general public to have a multi-fractured picture of the world that we're living in. But despite all of these attempts at political distractions, the logical facts, which deception and propaganda are designed to obscure, still remain for those who want to see them. Now, here's a fact contained in the financial report of the United States government, 2003, Financial Management Services of the U.S. Treasury. It's on page 4 of the report, and it's in the overall perspective table. Listen to this. The United States' $3.7 trillion deficit is the difference between total assets minus the total liabilities and net responsibilities, otherwise known as net worth, in 2003 versus 2002, and the deficit net worth, respectively, of $34.8 trillion and $31.1 trillion. Now, that U.S. $3.7 trillion is true actual shortfall in 2003 government operations, with the 2003 gross domestic product at $10.83 trillion in 2003. That places the U.S. annual budget deficit and the total government obligations at 34.2 and 321.3% of the U.S. GDP. Well, yes, the grammar is bad, but this is a verbatim transcript. Do you notice the numbers trillions of dollars of debt? Trillions. You see, our government used to operate on millions of dollars 100 years ago. Then, about mid-century, we were dealing in billions of dollars, and now at the end of the century, in the beginning of the 21st century, we talk in terms of trillions of dollars. And of course, all we're talking about is fiat currency. We're talking about graffiti is what we're coming to. A runaway hyperinflation of graffiti. Now, that spells economic doom for debtors and a great economic opportunity for those that have some real money, that is gold or silver or wheat, corn, beans, onion, oil. Now, the G7 knows all of this. This is something that Americans don't know and aren't being told and can't figure out or find out. But you can darn well bet that the other nations around the world, they can see what's going on. And these numbers come out of the U.S. government's Treasury Department. It's not something that's being manufactured by some group of kooks or anti-Republicans somewhere, you know, or Fahrenheit 9/11 and Roger Moore or something. As the privateer goes to press on the weekend of October 3 through 5, that's about last week, the G7 finance ministers and treasurers meet in Washington in preparation for the annual IMF and the World Bank meeting. And there's not one participant among these G7 who is not intimately familiar with the real financial situation of the U.S. federal government. Every one of the high-level participants from the G7 need only look at the real 34.2% of the gross domestic product of the U.S. federal deficit to know that this is the road that leads to an enormous financial debacle, which has only been avoided by the willingness of China and Japan to take onto their books an ever-climbing mountain of U.S. Treasury debt paper. And they know and know full well that this external funding for the U.S. Treasury will have to end at some point. They know that in principle, there are only two possible basic outcomes, and that is that either the U.S. goes public with its difficulties and massively cuts the value of the U.S. dollar and then balances its budget, or the G6 takes the money away. Either we're going to balance the budget, devalue the dollar, or the other nations are going to stop lending to us, which will force the collapse. Now we should clear up some confusion. You see, the members on our front page might be confusing to some of our readers, or the numbers, I should say, on our front page, might be confusing to some of our readers. The reason why these numbers on the U.S. Treasury's report are so large is that they bring together both the funded and the unfunded total liabilities of the U.S. Federal Treasury for the year 2003. Today, as a smaller counterpoint, the funded U.S. Treasury debt is just below the official U.S. debt ceiling of $7.35 trillion. And the U.S. Treasurer, Secretary of the Treasury, Snow, has been making vigorous demands upon the Republican Congress to urgently raise that debt limit before they all storm off to get reelected. An even smaller number is often used for purely political reasons. This is the about $4.3 trillion that is so coyly designated as debt held by the public. This number conveniently ignores the debt held in official hands, such as Asian central banks and in treasuries around the world. And it also ignores the huge UN-funded debts in the form of promised pensions, Social Security, and Medicare. So we have a funded debt, and we have an unfunded debt or liabilities. Unfunded are all of those liabilities that will surely come due, but we don't know with specificity how much they are. For instance, the veterans coming home from the war in Iraq are entitled to medical services as long as they live, as long as they're veterans and go to the VA hospitals. Are there going to be lots of expenses, or are there going to be a few expenses? We don't know. It's unfunded. But it's an obligation that has to be paid. Let's take a look at all of the baby boomers who are going to retire on Social Security over the next 15 or 20 years. They all have to be taken care of, and the debt, the bill that's coming in on that unfunded liability is in the trillions of dollars. I think we'll see here a little later on around $40 trillion. And here's the bottom line. There's just no way in hell that we've got the resources to pay it or fund it. Now, that means that you're going to have a default. You're not going to be able to pay your bills. And when that just happened in 2002 in Argentina, the economy collapsed, and their unemployment rate today is over 60%. Now, that's bad news for the majority of people, but 40% of the people are employed, and 40% of the people are making profits and making money off of the 60% who lost theirs. Don't ever think that the Great Depression was without its millionaires and without its profit-taking. There's lots of money to be made, lots of deals to be made, and you should be in position to take advantage of these bargain basement fire sales when the economy collapses and the dollar goes into orbit in hyperinflation, which is an eventuality that is certain to occur. It's always occurred in the past. In every country that has gone with fiat currency, they all collapse over time. Now, America holds the record. We've been doing this since 1914. Now, that's 90 years. We've been juggling this ball 90 years. We went through one depression, several recessions, but we hold the record for fiat paper currency and debased money. We beat the Roman Empire We've beat anything that the Germans or any country in the last 200 years has come up with. We outdid ourselves over our fiat money today compared to what it was back at the revolutionary period, the continental currency, when it collapsed in 1783. I mean, we are the champions. Now, of course, there's a price to pay for this champion status. Now, in addition to our official monetary shortfalls, our budget deficits, we also have what's known as the current account deficit. I don't know why we call that. It used to be called the balance of payments deficit. Now, the balance of payments deficit is simply the difference between the amount of goods and services that we buy overseas and the amount of goods and services we sell to people outside of our borders. So in the old days, the way this used to work was that the Arabs would send over a boatload of oil, and when it arrived in Houston, they would take and open the door of the U.S. gold vault on 42nd Street in New York, and they'd take out some gold and move it over to the Arab vault and stick it in there. Then when the United States would ship a bunch of Caterpillar tractors and oil drilling equipment or something like that over to Saudi Arabia, they'd go down into the vault and take the gold out of the Saudi vault and move it over to the American vault. And we hoped at the end of the year that they'd balance. Well, back in the 1950s and 60s, America was running a trade surplus with everybody in the world. Today, we're running a deficit with everybody in the world. In the 1950s, we were the world's number one creditor nation. Today, we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, when the foreclosure occurs, there's going to be a massive transfer of wealth. So if you've got a mortgage on your house, there's going to be a transfer of your house to somebody else. The debtor is servant to the lender. Now, the smart money is consolidating their debts and getting out of U.S. dollars. So if you've got debt, you need to eliminate it. If you don't know how to eliminate debt, then call and ask for my free general law CD package. And let me tell you the story about private business. Let me show you how to profit from the coming devaluation. During the 1920s, I knew a guy. In fact, he was one of my earlier mentors. His name was Russell Harvey. He sold all of his Transamerica stock. That's what he held in 1927, 2 years before the Depression. Everybody laughed at him, thought he was nuts. Of course, the Depression came, and in 1935, that Transamerica stock that he sold for over $270 a share in 1927, he bought it all back for $5 a share as Bank of America stock in 1934. Did he make a profit on the deal? Then that stock went up from $5 a share to $54 a share in 1953, with the stock split in 1953. Two for one, stock split. Yes, old man Harvey made a ton of money. And so did a whole host and plethora of other insider traders during the 1930s. They cashed out ahead of the collapse and then bought back in when things were cheap and let the people who were buying in at the top lose all of their equity and wealth and then came back in and bought it back. I mean, that's business. It's nothing personal, boys and girls. Don't get mad at me. Don't get mad at me. If Warren Buffett is getting out of U.S. dollars, that ought to tell you something. The Rockefellers not only got out of U.S. dollars, they got out of the United States and moved to Australia. Holding U.S. dollars is not good business. I mean, you can be patriotic if you want to, but that's your problem in life, not mine. The dollar is on the verge of collapse. In fact, if you'll take a look at the value of the dollar today compared to 1930, it's now worth 3.5 cents. It now takes a dollar to buy what 3.5 pennies bought in 1930. It now takes a dollar to buy what 50 cents would buy in 1980. In 1987, there were $3.5 trillion in the world. By 2000, there were $9 trillion. And by the end of next year, they hope to have $13.5 trillion in circulation. And the 3.5 cents that's left is on the verge of a catastrophic collapse. Like the economies of Australia, excuse me, Argentina, not Australia, but Argentina, 2 years ago, and Germany in the 1920s. Now, the U.S. current account deficit, what we're buying overseas, looks like this. To correct the present U.S. current account deficit, which widened to a record $166.2 billion in the second quarter of 2004, the U.S. dollar would have to fall about 20% on a full trade-weighted basis. Let me pause right here and show you a little something here. We had a $12 billion deficit in 1958, the federal deficit. This year, it's nearly half a trillion, $500 billion. It came in a little under $500 billion. Now, that's your federal budget deficit. Now, on the account, that is your balance of payments deficit, it's $166 billion in one quarter. We'll just take 166 times 4. That's $664 billion. Now, that's way over half a trillion. Now, keep in mind, how much money is there in the world to borrow? And the answer is about $800 billion. If everybody in the world who has any money to lend or invest came into the U.S. and bought all of the debt that we've run up for the year 2004, They'd have to come up with $664 billion plus $445 billion, which is $1,109 billion or $1.1 trillion. Now there's $800 billion to borrow. You know, that's $300 billion more than there is in the whole world. Are we bankrupt? Now, when I was a boy, they used to talk about the United States going bankrupt if we kept on with these crazy Roosevelt policies, deficit spending. Well, now it's an accomplished fact. It has now occurred. Now, the foreclosure hasn't occurred yet. They haven't come to take the car. They haven't repossessed anything yet, but stand by. There's more to the story. So the present, that is 2004, second quarter, balance of payments deficit is running at an annual rate of $650 plus billion dollars a year. And the U.S. dollar would have to fall 20% on a full trade weighted basis. On the surface, that might not look too bad. But for the current foreign holders of U.S. dollars or U.S. financial paper, those of you who have all of your assets denominated in dollars, it would amount to a near catastrophic loss when measured in terms of your own national currency. For Americans, it would amount to having the global purchasing power of the U.S. dollar fall by 20%. Or take a 20% pay cut, or take 20 cents out of every dollar of your portfolio. That's the value of your house, the value of your wages, salaries, tips, commissions, and gifts, bank accounts, everything that you own, just depreciate it by 20%, and that'll show you what's coming. Now, a 20% fall in the value of the U.S. dollar would actually increase the price of U.S. imports by 25%. So not only do you lose 20% of your portfolio, but in addition to that, prices immediately go up by 25%. So whatever something costs today, just add a quarter to it. So if the U.S. fell, say, from a dollar to 80, that is if the U.S. dollar falls from 100 to 80, returning to 100 is actually a 25% rise. Now the politics of U.S. Treasury deficits and debts look something like this. Here we step upon forbidden ground. We also step on numerous tender political toes. In fact, financially as well as economically, the simplest way to bring the U.S. Treasury back under partial control is to bluntly eliminate all the U.S. UN-funded liabilities. And to do this, U.S. politicians would simply have to state that a great many Americans, or what a great many Americans already know, and what we have promised you, you're not going to get. Now, all of you baby boomers out there aren't going to get paid your Social Security. Or put another way, you're going to receive a check in the amount of the full value of what you've been promised. But there are so many people that are going to receive those checks that the purchasing power of the money is going to fall precipitously. Prices are going to be rising precipitously. And in order for you to get your feet on the ground, you need to unload your debt. Now, there's a very normal, natural way to unload debt. It's called bankruptcy. But in order to bankrupt out of the debts you have to show that you're insolvent. And Americans are not insolvent yet. Not yet. So you're still making your payments. So the smart money is, you've got to unload your debt, and you've got to unload your debt in a bankruptcy, and you've got to unload that debt before the collapse occurs. If you don't, then you get held or you get caught holding the debt. Well, then when you get caught holding the debt, then you have all of the assets that you have to give up, cars, boats, toys, houses. And most people's most valuable asset is their house. Now, Americans over the past 2 or 3 years have maxed out the equity in their houses. That's right. So that wasn't too smart, because now the equity that you had, you went out and bought a new boat with, or a new car or something else, stimulated the economy, made everybody feel real good. But now you don't own the car. You don't own the house. You've got a job. 60% of Americans are going to lose their jobs. And then here's the kicker. Can you imagine the downward pressure on wages that will occur when you have a job paying you $10 an hour? You and 40 other guys have a job paying $10 an hour, and 60 other guys are unemployed. And they come in to your boss and say, we will work for you for $9 an hour. And when he hires that guy for $9 an hour, one of the unemployed guys comes in and says, gee, I'll work for $8 an hour. Then the next guy, 7, 6, 5, 4. So you have a collapse of wages at the very same time that you're importing all of these goods and services from overseas that you now have to pay for in gold, COD. Now, you can't buy all of the goods that you've been buying in the past because now you have to pay for them. Now you've got massive unemployment, declining wages, escalating prices, and the government in desperation trying to keep everybody happy. They go out and print more money until finally the money becomes totally worthless. Nobody will deal in it at all, and we're reduced to barter and dealing in other coin and currency. You know, the euros or Russian marks or Russian rubles or something else, or gold and silver, wheat, corn, beans, onion, oil. Then, of course, when this process occurs, then there's a massive reorganization. We just saw it down in Argentina. Massive political unrest. Lots of arguments and riots in the street. And we have to be able to weather the storm. And it takes 2 or 3 years. And you've got to be in a position to do that. Here at the law school, we teach a class on subsistence and survival. It doesn't have anything to do with guns. Doesn't have anything to do with camouflage suits. It has to do with day-to-day routine food, clothing, and shelter. Can you weather the storm for 2 or 3 years? If you can, then you can come out and profit from it. If you can't, then you'll be victimized by it. You know, in every disaster, there are victims and there are survivors. Some of the survivors not only survive, but they also profit. And now's the time for you to get in a position to profit from the coming collapse. That's the economic story that you should be hearing from our major political candidates. But I haven't heard anybody talking about the collapse of the dollar. I haven't heard anybody come up and say, listen, we've got to solve this Medicare Social Security deficit for the baby boomers, or at least explain to them why they're not going to get their money. Pete Peterson just wrote a book. He was the Commerce Secretary in the Nixon years. He's telling the same story. He's just a straight line insider telling you, okay, here it comes. Bend over. Get the Vaseline out. And I come along and report from these various and sundry newsletters. The real economic news is the economy is not vibrant. It's not well. It's sick unto death. It's so much worse than you could imagine that it defies description. Now hang on, we'll take a break and be right back with more right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs are the second and the eighth planks of the Communist Manifesto. And these programs call for a heavy progressive income tax in place of tithing, and Social Security is a social welfare scheme that takes the place of strict liability and individual responsibility. You know, the income tax requires of us that we serve two masters in violation of Matthew 6, verse 24. And this income tax requires of us that we rob God in violation of Malachi 3, verse 8. The income tax requires of us that we commit idolatry in violation of Exodus 20, verse 3. The income tax requires that we use unjust weights and balances in violation of Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. The income tax requires that we sign contracts with foreign and alien gods in violation of Exodus 23, verses 32 and 33. And Social Security violates the strict liability statute in Exodus 21, verses 28 through 36. And Social Security violates the 10th commandment by appealing to our lust and greed. Then we're taught to call that income redistribution. Now the scripture calls it covetousness in violation of Exodus 20, verse 17. Now, the God of Israel gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention followed that better way with Article 1, Section 10 that says, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Now, for more information about tax and status, why don't you call the law school? And as for my free general law CD package, the number is 417-273-4967. Now, remember, the general law CD package is a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and it's free of charge. Why don't you call and order yours today? Tax and status is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, just go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email, and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the privateer, issue number 511. Let me give you a little promotion here on the privateer. I recommend it. It's published by William A.M. Buckler, Post Office Box 2004 in Noosa Heads, Queensland, 4567, down in Australia. They've got a website. It's www.theprivateer.com. Now, there's a hyphen between the and privateer. Now, the email address is capt@the-privateer.com. An easy one, capt@the-privateer.com. Now, it's $180 Australian. That's about $120 or $130 U.S. Even with our depreciated U.S. dollars, keeping this in mind now that a dollar today, has 3.5 cents of purchasing power compared to where we started in 1930 with Roosevelt and the New Deal. Now, we elected to go with fiat currency, devaluation, and free trade with Roosevelt in the 1930s. We adopted the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. We Americans have become practicing communists. And, of course, there's a reward or there's a benefit or there's a curse or a penalty that comes from it, and we're there in the year 2004 about to reap it. All right, now the privateer goes on, has a little more to the story. The end financial reasons are very simple. You're not going to get what you've been promised. Now, that's number one. And the sum of future financial promises already made and passed into law are, in reality, impossible to keep. Now, Alan Greenspan pointed that out to Congress, that we need to get busy and start telling people that the expectations that they believe they're going to receive are not going to materialize. Now, I'm 65 years old. I do not draw Social Security. I could, but I don't. I don't want to go on the dole. and I'm not going to. And I'm facing the same economic collapse that you and your relatives and your friends and neighbors are all facing, just like the Argentines and the Germans and every nation that's ever dealt in fiat currency, including the United States in 1783, including the United States in 1929. It's happened before, and it's going to happen again. Now, why don't we get ready for it, and let's make a profit from it? Now, I teach a business school, and I'm not looking forward to this economic collapse, but I'm not dreading it either. It's going to be tough for people. I don't deny that. And there's going to be some revaluations and some dislocations. But when it's all said and done, I want to be able to come back into the marketplace and buy in at $5 from 275 like Russell Harvey did. And, you know, you can do the same thing. That's what the smart money did in 1927, 28, and 29. And I think that's what the smart money should be doing in 2003, 2004, and 2005. Now, I gave you a report from the money changer, James Turk, said that we might have 3 years left. The privateer and the staff down in Australia are asking the question, we don't know if it's going to come before November the 2nd or after November the 2nd. That's how dire the economic situation in America is. Something's going to trigger it. We don't know what's going to trigger it, but listen up. The end financial reasons are simple. You see, the sum of future financial promises that have already been made and passed into law are in reality impossible to keep. The United States estimates of the so-called fiscal gap is potentially as high as $72 trillion. $72 trillion. The IMF has estimated the gap at about $47 trillion. The Brookings Institute figures that the gap is $60 trillion. We're not going to be able to meet these kinds of obligations. So here's the U.S. estimates. $72 trillion, $47 trillion, or $60 trillion, and we don't have the money. To tax these fantastic amounts of money in full out of the American economy over the next 20-odd years to pay these baby boomers would devastate American businesses as well as most of American households. To borrow it would swing the funded U.S. Treasury debt up into and include these unfunded liabilities. To print these amounts of U.S. dollars would reduce the U.S. currency to confetti. Now, the Federal Reserve last year, along with Alan Greenspan and the New York Fed, said that they're going to crank up the printing presses, and they're going to print our way out of the recession. We suffered a double whammy. We suffered the stock market collapse, the tech bubble collapse of 2000, started in March of 2000, and then we suffered a $1 trillion hit with the terrorist attack on the Trade Center. And it's that $1 trillion hit on the Trade Center that tipped the ship over. That's the real bottom line. They probably could have pulled out of the recession if it hadn't been for that additional $1 trillion hit. Now, this war in Iraq is simply a diversion to keep your mind off of the real issue, the real problem, which is the economy. As old Bill Clinton used to say, hey, it's the economy, stupid. He's right. That's what it is. It's the economy. Now, if printing is resorted to, and that's probably what's coming, that is out-and-out inflation of the quantity of U.S. dollars. And we're reminded of a joke on the streets of Vienna, Austria, where price rises were even worse than they were in Germany during the 1920s when inflation was in its terminal stages. A man had gained a small estate of about $1,000 American when he was conscripted and had to go to war. In his first encounter, he was knocked unconscious and only regained his faculties in late 1923. His world had certainly changed a lot since 1914, but he remembered his small estate and he went to the office where it was. And there was not a single problem, but he was astounded to get the pre-war equivalent of $3.5 trillion. Totally stunned by it all, he went to get a cup of coffee. When he was finished, he asked for the bill, and the waitress informed him that the pre-war equivalent was $2.5 trillion. Now, this is what I pointed out to you. You're going to get paid your money. The government is not going to default on the number of dollars. What they're going to default on is the value of the dollars delivered. That's why gold and silver coin is so important. It isn't that when the price of gold goes to $800 or $8,000 an ounce that we're making great profits. It just holds the value against a depreciating paper currency. That's all. And as long as people are using paper currency to settle their daily transactions, you know, you need to buy a tank of gas, and gasoline is $2 a gallon. Pretty soon it'll be $4 a gallon, then $8 a gallon, and $16 a gallon, and $32 a gallon. And you hope that your wages will go from $10 an hour to $20 an hour to $40 an hour to $80 an hour, but they won't. While prices are doubling, going 2, 4, 6, 8, your wages will be going 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. Your wages grow arithmetically and prices grow geometrically. That's the difference. So get ready for it. Let's be prepared. Now, to bring the U.S. Treasury's current funded, now that does not include the UN-funded deficit spending under control, it's going to take either massive tax increases and or equally massive spending cuts. Either way, the huge artificial stimulus is going to be withdrawn. And once again, the recession is going to hit with full force and effect. Now, there's more on this U.S. fiscal gap. Medicare trustees show the fiscal gap has now grown to $72 trillion. That's just Medicare. We haven't talked about Social Security yet. There's going to be a shortfall in Medicare of $72 trillion. See, the president just gave all of you seniors free drugs. And there's probably a good reason for that. You see, if you people are drugged up, you can't be thinking. And if you're not thinking, then you won't be worrying. And if you're not worrying, you can go out and vote. So we're going to give you free drugs. We're going to give you tax cuts. We're going to give you continued Social Security. We're going to give you all of these benefits. Where in the world do you Americans think that this money comes from? There's only two sources for government to get money, because government produces nothing. At least General Motors produces cars. Microsoft produces computer software. IBM produces computers. Caterpillar produces tractors. Government produces nothing, consumes much. Government produces nothing and consumes much. Government cannot give you a dollar until they first take a dollar and a half away from you or somebody else. And it costs 50 cents to take that dollar and distribute it to you. You know, you'd be better off if you just went out and stole it from the guy that you're getting it from to start with. You could eliminate that 50 cents that the government takes to distribute it. And it amounts to theft. It's a forced confiscation of somebody else's wealth. That's what it really boils down to. Now, the array of U.S. public and private analysts put the actual U.S. fiscal gap of all future receipts minus all future obligations at levels ranging from $40 trillion, that comes from the government GAO, the Government Accounting Office, to $72 trillion, that's the Social Security Board of Trustees. The first of the 77 million baby boom generation will begin to retire in 4 years. That's 2008. They won't get what they're counting on. The Medicare trustees show the fiscal gap at $72 trillion. That's U.S. $10 trillion of that is for Social Security, and an astonishing $62 trillion for Medicare. So $62 for Medicare, $10 for Social Security, a total of $72 trillion in shortfall. Former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill estimated a $44 trillion fiscal gap 2 years ago, and he was thrown out the door. When the former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill said, wait a minute, we're going to run a $44 trillion gap, we're going to be $44 trillion short, he was fired. Now, it's worse than that. It's not 44, it's 72. They had to revise it upward. And it always works out that way, doesn't it? Think about it. Whenever the government comes along and says, well, here's what we estimate the cost to be, it's always more than that. Sometimes it's two or three times more. Now, we've been living through a decade of economic delusion. And over the past decade, the fall in U.S. net savings was accompanied by a steady rise in net overall lending, which culminated in a rate of personal indebtedness which reached a record of 140% of disposable income by the first quarter of 2004. Net savings, that's the amount of money you put in the bank or saved, of U.S. personal sector, has fallen unrelentingly since 1992, reaching a historically unprecedented minus 6% of disposable income by 2001. Americans save absolutely nothing. We've got a minus 6% savings rate. Well, you can't blame people. I mean, why would you want to put $100 in the bank in 1980 so that you can end up 24 years later with 50 cents worth of purchasing power? That's where you're at. If you put $100 in the bank in 1930, you got $3.50 worth of purchasing power left in 2004. Why would you want to do that? Now, you've got the same problem, boys and girls, if you have a house and you have $100,000 equity in your house. When the collapse comes, when the bubble breaks, you're not going to have $100,000 worth of equity. You're going to have $100,000 worth of liability. See, if you've got 50% equity and a $200,000 house, you got $100,000 equity that you lose 100% of, and then you still have the $100,000 debt. Now somebody says, yeah, but I can pay that debt off with these new depreciated dollars. That's true. If you've got the depreciated dollars to take advantage of it with. And here's the way that works. Let's suppose that you've got a $200,000 house and you've got $100,000 worth of equity. And you sell the house today and you take the $100,000 worth of equity. Let's just do this, $100,000. And let's divide that by $420. And that's the price of gold today. And you get 238 ounces of gold. Now take the 238 ounces of gold and go put them in a hole in the ground. Now go out and live your life. The bubble collapses and that house is foreclosed on. Now, you can come back in with your 238 ounces, assuming that there's no inflation and the price is the same, buy the house at public auction and own it free and clear. Better yet, let's suppose we go into hyperinflation and the money depreciates by 50%. Your 238 ounces will double in value to $800 an ounce. Now you can buy that same house for $50,000. If it doubles again, you can buy it for $25,000 and so on down the line. Now that's where the smart money was in 1927 to 35. Sell at the peak, or as close to the peak as you can get. Convert it to hard money. Bury it in a hole in the ground and come back into the marketplace in 5 years and buy that stuff for 5 cents on the dollar, 10 cents, 15 cents on the dollar. Total U.S. household debt has soared from $7 trillion at the end of 2000 to $9.5 trillion in the first quarter of 2004. What the above blunt factual data shows us is that most Americans have been living it up for a decade or perhaps slightly longer in a land of economic delusion. The phenomenon has been so vast and so widespread that clinically, delusion is the only proper term to describe what is happening to the entire nation of America. Adam Smith, the founder of the British Classical School of Economics, published his Wealth of Nations in 1776, the same year that Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence. Then, for more than 100 years, the British school developed the techniques of peering behind the monetary curtain to perceive the real economic changes and what caused these changes. Had they been the observers of the economic, monetary, and financial events inside the United States over the past decade, they would have long since raised the alarm. Now, the much superior intellectual tools from the Austrian school of Menger, Bohm, Biwerk, and von Mises would have reached the same conclusions, though with much greater accuracy. The conclusion that both of these schools of historically proven economic thought would be that under the past decade plus of U.S. economic, military, monetary, and credit policy, a massive economic breakdown is inevitable. Now, we had an economic breakdown in 1783, 1929. The Germans had it in 1923. The British have had it. The Japanese, the Chinese, and many of the countries of Latin America have gone through these economic crises, these economic collapses or breakdowns. The people of the country don't move. You know, the Germans of 1923 are still there in Germany today. The Argentines have gone through this several times. They're still down there in Argentina, and they're going to be there for a while longer. We Americans have gone through this twice in our history. We're about to go through it a third time. And massive amounts of money change hands. Massive amounts of wealth, that is houses and lands and farms and stocks and bonds and chattels, all of this changes hands. You want to see if you can't position yourself to be a beneficiary of the collapse rather than a victim of it. So let me invite you again. Write for my free General Law CD package. It's free of charge. And I'll tell you more about private business. There's a 20-minute segment in there about private business. Let me tell you some of the stories about some of the people that have been through this before. I interviewed more than 80 people in the 1970s and 80s. More than 80 people who had lived through the 1930s depression. People like my Uncle Buster and Aunt Bessie and my grandmother. I asked them, well, how did you get through it? And what happened to you, and what were some of the tricks of the trade, and how did you benefit from it, or how were you harmed by it? And I'll tell you the story in my business school of the winners and the losers, so that you can avoid what the losers did to lose, and you can take advantage of what the winners did to win. The ones that took advantage didn't cheat anybody out of a quarter. The man who sold in 1927, put his money into gold, put it in a hole in the ground, and waited to buy that same stock at $5 a share in 1935, didn't steal from anybody. Never took advantage of anybody. He took advantage of the inevitable economic consequences of the excesses of the Federal Reserve and the monetary policies of the U.S. government in the 1920s. It was inevitable, and it proved out that that's what happened. 1783 was the same thing. The Argentine collapse in 2002 was predictable. We all could see it coming. So, Germany in 1923, Japan after World War II, Germany after World War II, these are predictable events. Now, what's coming on the world is a predictable event. It's not just the United States. The United States will be the precipitator and the other nations will collapse. There's going to be a massive realignment of money and economics, military and industrial power. And it's going to shift from the United States to China. It's going to have massive geopolitical consequences. Massive. Geopolitical consequences that speak in terms of Armageddon, biblical geopolitical consequences. And there's going to be winners and there's going to be losers. There will be survivors and there will be victims. So this is the decade of the 1990s of economic delusion, which is now about to come to fruition. The much superior intellectual tools of the Austrian school are about to be proven correct. Now, economic recessions and depressions are man-made events. The financial mismanagement which brings them about can last for years, even decades. It's lasted 70 years. The time at which they happen cannot be forecast with precision, but what can be stated with clarity is the policies which will in time and with certainty lead to a real economic breakdown. On the other side, the economic and fiscal policies which do not lead to any such economic breakdown are known and have been known in outline for more than 200 years and with precision for at least a century. Now, these policies deny any proclaimed efficiency or efficacy of economic intervention by government. They deny any efficacy of inflating the quantity of money in use or of expanding credit or of deficit spending. And they deny any place in the welfare state or communism or to the claim that government regulation is superior to freely functioning free markets and market price systems. And they hold that such policies as direct or indirect government control over internal or foreign trade, government pensions as a substitute for private savings, and the imposition of public property over private property, and the introduction of legal tender or fiat paper money are all destructive to the economic well-being of anyone who has such policies forced upon them. So whether the policies are forced upon you or you've accepted them voluntarily really isn't relevant, is it? Sadly, too many Americans have let all of these policies be imposed upon them while living for the decade of the 1990s in a land of economic delusion created by their government. The result is that debt has climbed to the point where it takes annual inflow of $1 trillion a year to stave off this instant collapse. It takes $1 trillion a year to stave it off, but there's only $800 billion to borrow. We've gone beyond the point of no return. All right, The Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events from the scriptural perspective, and we do that 7 days a week. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station. For more information about The Law Hour and editorial review, please go to my website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Well, there's the signal. It says my time is up. I'll have to leave it right there. We'll take this up with the privateer next time. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing. So until then, good night, friends.